All right, welcome back everyone for another deep dive. You know, we love digging into the nitty-gritty of legal cases, and today we've got a real humdinger from Louisiana.
Oh yeah, this one's a classic.
A real property line showdown. The case is called Guthrie v. Rudy Brown Builders. You ever think about, like, what actually happens when, you know, you discover your neighbor's fence is, like, way over on your property?
It's the kind of situation that makes you want to double-check your survey, like, right away.
Absolutely. And, you know, this case, it really gets into, like, the nitty-gritty. Like, what can a buyer actually expect to recover in these situations?
Mm.
I mean, can you get your attorney's fees back? What about compensation for all the stress and the headache this kind of thing can cause?
Yeah, those are the big questions. The ones that keep homeowners up at night.
All right, so let's set the stage here. We've got the Guthries or home buyers, right? They're just trying to enjoy their new property. Then we've got Rudy Brown Builders, Inc. That's the company that sold them the house.
The sell.
Exactly. But hold on, there's more. We also have the Raguses, the neighbors right next door.
Yeah.
And guess what? They bought their house from the same builder, Rudy Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And their fence? Well, let's just say it got a little too comfortable on the Guthrie side of the property line.
That's never a good sign.
And to top it off, we can't forget Don Garland, the surveyor, the one who did the initial survey, which turned out to be, well, let's just say a little off the mark.
Off by a bit, yeah.
So the Raguses, they built their fence based on this, you know, this not quite accurate survey. And boom, encroachment city. The fence is smack dab on the Guthrie's land, lawsuit time. Both the Guthries and actually the Raguses too, they sue the builder, Rudy Brown Builders, and they sue the surveyor, Don Garland.
Makes sense. When property lines get blurry, everyone starts looking for answers.
Right. You're trying to figure out who's responsible. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Before even going to a full-blown trial, all the parties, they agree to a practical solution. Let's just fix the darn fence, right? So they decide to redraw the property lines. They do a whole re-subdivision, get that boundary in the right spot, and importantly, Rudy Brown Builders, they agree to pay for it, the whole re-subdivision thing. And even buy a little piece of the Guthrie's land just to make everything nice and square. Problem solved, right?
Well, the fence is fixed, but it's not always the end of the story, is it?
You hit the nail on the head. Because even though the property line is sorted out, the Guthries, they're not done. They're still going after damages. Specifically, they want compensation for, you know, the mental anguish, the stress of this whole encroachment ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
And they want their attorney's fees covered, all the legal expenses they racked up.
Right, because those costs can really add up.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The trial court, they said no, denied those claims. That's what sends the Guthries up to the appeals court and straight into the heart of our deep dive.
A plot thickens.
It really does. So here's the central legal question, the puzzle we're going to untangle together. Did the Guthrie's case under Louisiana law fall under redhibition or the warranty against eviction? You with me so far?
I am. And for our listeners who might not be law students, let's break down those terms.
Excellent point. Redhibition, in a nutshell, it's this implied promise that when you buy something, it's free for these big hidden defects, right? Like you buy a car, you expect it to run, not break down on the way home. Warranty against eviction, on the other hand, that's the seller's guarantee that nobody else has a better claim to the property, a claim that could mess with your ownership rights. And knowing which one applies here, that's crucial because it dictates what remedies, what legal solutions are actually on the table for the buyer.
It's like choosing the right tool for the job, the wrong one, and you might not get the results you're looking for.
Exactly. So first up, let's look at redhibition. How did the court handle that?
Well, they basically said, nope, this isn't a redhibition situation. See, redhibition usually applies when there's a problem, like a defect, within the thing itself. In this case, the house or the land.
Like the foundation's cracked or something?
Right. But the court, they saw the encroachment as different. They said it wasn't a defect in the Guthrie's property itself, but an issue created by something outside, an external factor. The Raguses and their misplaced fence. So, big takeaway here, Louisiana law, it draws a line between defects inside your property and issues caused by things outside of it.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's not like the house had termites or a leaky roof. It was the neighbor stepping over the line, literally. Now, there's this other term that's connected to redhibition. It's called quanti minoris. What's that all about?
Quanti minoris basically means you're asking for a price reduction. Say the defect doesn't make the thing completely unusable, but it does lower its value or usefulness. You can sue to get some money back.
Like if the house had a tiny crack in the wall, not a deal breaker, but still, you know, annoying.
Exactly. But just like with redhibition, the court said quanti minoris didn't apply here. They reasoned that because the problem wasn't some hidden flaw within the Guthrie's property, but this external encroachment, and it was fixed with the re-subdivision, asking for a price reduction wasn't the right move. So another key point, when an external issue gets resolved, these claims about defects, they become less relevant.
All right, so redhibition and quantum minoris are off the table.
Yeah.
So where did the court end up landing?
The warranty against eviction. And this is a big one. It's all about protecting buyers. It basically says the seller is giving you clear and undisturbed ownership. Nobody else can come along and say, hey, that's part of my property, or try to mess with your right to possess and enjoy your land.
It's peace of mind, right? You know you're the rightful owner.
Absolutely. And in the Guthrie's case, even though the Ragusas weren't claiming they own the whole property, that fence, it was a problem. It was an outside force messing with the Guthrie's peaceful enjoyment of their property.
It was like a mini eviction, right?
Right.
Even if it was just for a sliver of land.
Exactly. And the court said, yep, this falls under the warranty against eviction.
Okay. So the warranty against eviction is the right legal framework. But remember, the Guthrie's, they were after some specific things, like attorney's fees. Those legal bills can really pile up. What did the court have to say about that, especially with his warranty against eviction thing?
Well, here's the thing about warranty against eviction claims. Louisiana Civil Code Article 2506.3 lays out the expenses a buyer can recover from the seller if they get evicted. And listen to this, attorney's fees, not usually included. The court really drove this home, saying attorney's fees aren't typically part of the costs occasioned by the eviction, according to the law. So, major takeaway for everyone listening, unless you're directly defending your title against a third party, don't expect to get those attorney's fees back from the seller in this type of case.
That's a big one to remember. But hold on, I thought there was like a little wiggle room there. Something about recovering fees if you're defending your title.
That's sharp memory. That's a crucial distinction. The court said that if the Guthrie's had spent money on a lawyer to defend their ownership against the Ragusas directly, like if the Ragusas had sued for that piece of land and the Guthrie's had to fight back those fees, they might be recoverable from Rudy Brown Builders under the warranty against eviction. But that wasn't what happened here. The Guthrie's were seeking the fees they paid to sue the builder for the warranty breach. And those fees, the court made clear, are not covered under Article 2506.3. So defending against a third party, maybe get those fees back. Suing the builder directly, generally, no.
All right, that clears that up. No attorney's fees for suing the builder. Now, on to the other biggie. Damages for mental anguish, all that stress and worry. What was the court's reasoning on that?
Buckle up. This is where the court gets philosophical. They talk about the primary object of a contract. They look back at another case, Metter v. Toyota, which dealt with emotional distress damages, but for a messed up car repair. The idea from Metter, which the court used in Guthrie, is that whether you can get those mental anguish damages in a breach of contract case, it often comes down to the main purpose, the object of the contract itself.
So what's this primary object business all about? How do they apply that to buying a house?
The courts in both Metter and Guthrie, they draw a line between contracts that are mostly about intellectual enjoyment and those that are mostly about physical gratification. If the main reason you're making a contract is for some intellectual or emotional satisfaction, like buying a wedding ring as a symbol of love or a family portrait to preserve a memory, then if the contract's broken, you might be able to get those emotional distress damages. But if the main object is to fulfill a physical need, a tangible benefit like buying a car to get around, or crucially, a house for shelter, then those emotional distress damages, generally not happening under Louisiana law.
So buying a house is seen as primarily about having a place to live, a physical need, not about emotional fulfillment, at least legally speaking.
Precisely. While we all know there are huge emotions tied to buying a home, that excitement, the sense of security, the law puts it in the physical gratification category. So even though the Guthrie's definitely went through it with the fence debacle, the court said, sorry, no non-pecuniary damages for mental anguish in this type of case. Think about it like this. A house is more like a car, a practical thing, than, say, a cherished family photo where the sentimental value is through the roof, especially when courts are deciding about these kinds of damages.
So big picture time. What are our key takeaways for the folks listening in?
All right, listen up. Builders, they got to make sure those surveys are accurate and that property ownership is crystal clear. But For buyers who find themselves in a fence-over-the-line situation, the legal options might be more limited than they initially think. When the main issue becomes this warranty against eviction, the focus shifts to fixing the physical problem, the boundary line, not necessarily compensating for the emotional roller coaster or covering all those legal fees from suing the builder.
And remembering that difference between rent admission and warranty against eviction, that can make or break your case.
No doubt. Go after a rent admission claim when the heart of the matter is really eviction. You might miss out on those specific damages, attorney's fees, and emotional distress compensation.
It all boils down to really understanding Louisiana real estate law, knowing the ins and outs of those promises and guarantees that come with buying property.
And Guthrie, it's a textbook example. Even though the Guthries went through a lot because of that misplaced fence, the law, as it stands, focused on getting that boundary right, not necessarily making them whole emotionally or financially from suing the builder.
So here's something to chew on as we wrap up. The Guthries, they went through real stress, no question. Does this legal distinction between physical gratification and intellectual enjoyment really capture the whole picture of how these property disputes affect people? What if that fence had made their property unusable? Not just a boundary line issue, but a real impact on their lives. It's something to think about as you navigate the world of property law.
It really makes you wonder if the law fully recognizes the human element in these situations. Does it go far enough?
That's a big question, one worth pondering. Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we unpack more of these fascinating legal cases.
See you then.
Until next time.